From Williamsport to Jeanette, Breezewood to Camp Hill, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Governor Tom Wolf delivered his annual budget address this past week. He called for no broad-based tax increases, but plenty of new spending. David Taylor of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is here to lead a Capital Watch roundtable discussion. And from increasing the state's minimum wage to calls for new taxes on natural gas drillers, Governor Tom Wolf has laid out a second-term agenda right out of the Democratic Socialist playbook. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. State Senator Daylon Leach, who is embroiled in a messy fight over sexual abuse allegations, has stepped down as minority chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Leach said the possibility the committee may consider legislation that could be relevant to his situation prompted him to remove himself as chairman to avoid a potential conflict of interest. A private criminal complaint has been filed against Leach by a woman who alleged that in 1991 he forced her to perform a sex act. The senator has not only denied the allegations, but says he will sue for defamation. In 2017, several women accused Leach of improper behavior and unwanted physical contact. At the time, Leach was running for a seat in Congress. He abandoned that campaign but weathered the controversy to remain in the Senate. Governor Tom Wolf and others have called upon Leach to resign. He rejected those calls and says he will fight to clear his name. One Democratic kingmaker who will have significantly less impact on statewide and city politics is John Dougherty. Johnny Dock, as he is known, is head of the IBEW Local 98 and was indicted along with Philadelphia Councilman Bobby Hennen on a wide range of federal charges. Dougherty used his political clout to get his brother, Kevin Dougherty, elected to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. Justice Dougherty was a key vote on the court, forcing that controversial congressional district re-gerrymander last year. Johnny Dock also was a power broker behind the election of Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney. Kenney faces a re-election battle this year. Races for seats on Pennsylvania's statewide appellate courts get little attention, although last year's re-gerrymander of the state's congressional districts by the Supreme Court dramatically illustrated the impact those courts can have. This year, two seats are up on the Pennsylvania Superior Court. Last weekend, the Republican State Committee endorsed Cumberland County Judge Krista Lee Peck and Chester County Deputy District Attorney Megan King. They bested former Montour County District Attorney Rebecca Warren for the party's nods. Voters will get their say in the May primary election. The winners will advance to the general election. Democrats have not yet met to endorse their slate. Read about all things Pennsylvania on patownhall.com. The state budget season officially got underway with Governor Tom Wolf's annual budget address to the legislature. He did not call for any broad-based tax hikes, but he does plan on borrowing billions and on new spending. Here to sort through the governor's proposals is our Capital Watch crew. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Matthew Briette of the Commonwealth Partner Chamber of Entrepreneurs and by Rebecca Euler from the National Federation of Independent Business. David?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio for today's program, Rebecca Euler, Legislative Director for the National Federation of Independent Business in Pennsylvania. Rebecca, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here again, David.
And our other teammate here, Matt Briette, CEO of Commonwealth Partners, the Chamber of Entrepreneurs. Matt, thanks for being here.
Hey, good to be with you both.
So it's Groundhog Day all over again, and that we have the 2019-2020 General Fund budget proposal from Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf that he addressed the General Assembly in a joint session just recently. And before we do all the spelunking and get down into the details of his plan, I want to say the governor struck a very specific tone of the responsibility of governing, of treating one another with respect, listening to one another, and of effective governance. And just like right out of the gate, I want to say that is a very welcome attitude. And for all the differences that we have had, do have, and will have, want to accept what the governor put forward, you know, in the spirit in which it was intended.
Indeed, Dave, what's interesting is that, of course, the governor gave his budget address at noon, and then 9 hours later, the president of the United States gave the State of the Union address. And you probably could, you know, categorize them differently in their style. But substance, I think, is where we'll end up showing the big difference is that while Governor Wolf is to be commended for his amiable and conciliatory and respectful demeanor, his policies, when we get into it, you will see it's anything but.
Yes.
And you might say the opposite for the president. Style, well, a lot to criticize, but substance? Boy, there's a lot of praiseworthy policy agenda that's happening. So it's a little, study in contrast.
Yes,
here.
Yes, paradoxical, as yes. The saying goes. So anyway, well, Matt, do you want to bat lead off and just kind of give the big picture?
Yeah. So the big picture, and Dave, you talked about the general fund budget, and that is what we generally spend about 99% of our time talking about in the media and discussions. But it's important for everyone to understand that there is something called the total operating budget.
Right.
That includes not only the general fund budget, which the governor proposed at $34.15 billion. There's also other operating budgets. When you add all of that up, and that includes things like the driver's fund, I'm sorry. That
motor includes, vehicle license fund.
Yeah, that includes the motor vehicle license fund, lottery fund. There's like 150 other state funds.
And all of the money from the federal program. That pass through the Commonwealth, the agencies.
That's correct. And so when you total all of that up, because remember, this is all taxpayer money.
Right.
You know, and even when we talk about federal money, we're the federal taxpayers
yes,
as well.
Yes, we are.
When you add all of that up, he's proposed a $85.8 billion budget for Pennsylvania. So this is a significant increase, about almost a billion dollars more in just general fund spending, nearly 3% growth, far exceeding inflation and population growth. So he's proposing a significant increase in spending. Now he's claiming no new taxes, but of course he's had that discussion previous week about taxes that he wants to raise, which I'm sure we will be covering.
Yes, absolutely. Rebecca, you had some benchmark numbers that I thought were very helpful in terms of the composition of state spending.
Right. Well, as Matt was just saying, you have to look at the whole picture of the budget, and actually, the one thing that was a little disappointing, I think, I found in the governor's budget proposal is there are several cost drivers to the general fund spending in the budget that take up the vast majority of that spending level. And in fact, if my numbers are correct, if I did my math correctly, about 91% of that general fund budget is taken up by four programs, basically. And that is education, corrections, human services, and debt service. So there wasn't a lot of substance to the point about policy in the governor's proposal that addresses any of those cost drivers that are really driving a large, large percent of the budget.
Well, one of the items that he featured in his remarks was the issue regarding the workforce, the skills gap, and this is a very real. For employers, it's a crisis that that employers cannot find enough qualified new hires to staff up. It winds up being a real drag on economic growth because, you know, again, the work can't be done if you don't have people there to do that work. So again, we'll commend the governor. He's addressed the correct problem. However, some of the ways that he approaches it are less than optimal.
Right. We all agree that workforce is a major issue here in the Commonwealth, and that goes across the board. Small businesses, big businesses, even government agencies are having trouble finding employees right now. We all know that's an issue, so we do commend the governor in trying to address that. But we do – one thing we got to consider is that the programs that, we're putting the resources toward are actually effective in addressing the problem.
Yes.
So that's one thing I think we need to look very closely at the budget.
Because for the listeners to understand, our job training workforce development system is highly fragmented. It's dozens of programs that run through multiple
state agencies, cabinet
departments, and everything, because it's a combination of state taxpayer dollars and federal taxpayer dollars. Federal rules govern these programs, and so everything's stuck in its own silo.
And the governor did propose a in his remarks, he proposed a program, a portal of some sort that's going to try to make a single location where all of those agencies are going to coordinate more seamlessly together so that they can address specific workforce issues and address specific coordinate the programs better,
right. You know,
I guess.
My question in all this is, I don't know about you guys, but members of mine, they don't use any of these government programs.
Right.
I mean, and so
that's right.
When they are looking for employees, they're not going to some government agency saying, hey, find the people for me. They're out there beating the bushes. They're training people themselves. And so I almost wonder, wouldn't it be better to just wipe all of these out? And I'm just throwing this out there and say, we're going to reduce your tax burden and allow you to take care of your own workforce. Is that not a viable solution?
What we need to do is to voucherize it. We need to break down the walls, and one of the ways of accomplishing that would be if the Commonwealth, if the state government would petition Washington for a waiver to say, would you allow us to suspend these rules so that we can reinvent the system so that it is effective for us and for what we need? And actually, Rebecca, you were saying that out in the state of Indiana that they've actually done this.
Yes, Indiana had a recent pilot program which they're expanding and going full throttle with, I believe now, where they requested a waiver to the federal Department of Labor and Industry and received it. They picked the four or five top most effective workforce programs that they have in the state and focused all of their efforts in those four or five areas. And I think that programs where employers work directly with schools, for example, are a model and do really well because they address specific workforce issues that are occurring in local communities. And one thing we've been talking about at the policy level around here is losing our young people out of Pennsylvania.
Yes.
They're moving away. To the extent that we can link them with job opportunities in their local communities before they even get to that point, I think we're going to help address that issue.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me, Matt Briette from Commonwealth Partners and Rebecca Euler from NFIB Pennsylvania. So, Matt, you know, talking about education, that the governor was – talk about what he rolled out.
Well, of course, everybody's for education. I've yet to find a politician that's against public education. But this speech very well could have been written by the teachers union, because everything thrown in here, of course, is going to massively expand their control over education tax dollars, which – of course, he wants to increase, boost them significantly. Some of the things that the governor's proposes, moving down the age of compulsory education from 8-year-olds to 6-year-olds, and bumping up the dropout age at which a student could drop out from 17 to 18. He wants to increase the starting wage. This goes along, I guess, with his minimum wage proposals. Starting wage for teachers at $45,000. Now, the average across Pennsylvania is over $67,000, and we are already the 10th highest paid teacher salaries in the U.S. And as a former teacher, I'm all for high teacher pay. But unfortunately, the way the union structure compensation, it's based on seniority, based on years of service, and it's not based on your competency or your subject matter. So a phys ed teacher with 30 years is going to make more than a physics teacher of just 3 years. Ultimately, compensation has to be determined at the local level. Your school district is going to have to set salaries that can attract teachers. And it's going to be different, of course, across the state, from urban areas to rural areas. So this notion of setting a minimum wage in public education, that's certainly going to affect rural areas. But that's money that maybe the district says, look, we can find excellent teachers. We don't have to start them off at say, $45,000, which could be a significant increase over the average wage in that community. Yet it's going to be local taxes in many of those places that have to continue to maintain that. Because, of course, then you have to add in the surcharge of like a 33% for pension costs, mm-hmm. Health care costs, all of these things. So it's kind of like, yeah, that sounds really nice. And again, as a former teacher, that always sounded good to me of higher pay. But that's money that is going to have to be raised locally, and it's going to come with added costs elsewhere.
Well, and there was another misguided policy. It will actually sort of like a good thing and a bad thing that are at odds with one another, that, you know, that the governor, to his, you know, to his credit, talked about corrections reform, talked about helping to reintegrate people who have run afoul of the law, who've paid their debt to society, to help them to return to productive life. And I think that that should be an area mm-hmm. where there can be agreement. The problem is, at the same time, he's also pushing a dramatic increase in the state-mandated minimum wage. And so these things are very much at cross purposes with one another, that the folks who are just getting out of prison, they are not going to be able to bring enough value to a new employer, because this is meant to be a training wage.
Yeah.
And so you're going to shut off opportunities for these people who are re-entering the workforce, and you're going to increase the likelihood that they're going to wind up like afoul of the law again, wind up behind bars again. And that's not the outcome we want. We need these new job opportunities for people to be able to be productive.
Absolutely. And I think you hit the nail on the head when you sort of mentioned that the dramatic increase in the minimum wage, which he's proposing to go immediately to $12 and then incrementally up to $15 over the course of the next couple of years, which is a really dramatic increase. But that proposal was really at cross purposes to the other proposals that he's talking about, the other policy things that he's concentrating on, and corrections reform being one of them, but the other being workforce. Because, we just mentioned that who best does training for workforce. I mean, I think there is a role for government, but when you sort of cut off these jobs that pay minimum wage, you're also removing a whole level of workforce development.
Independent fiscal office, I think, put it over 50,000 jobs would be destroyed if you go to $15 an hour. Well, and when we have a system that incentivizes non-work, whether it's receiving Medicaid dollars, and while you're able-bodied, you don't have dependents, you could actually be in the workplace, that's one of those things that was missing from Governor Wolf's budget address, is tackling what are skyrocketing entitlement costs in Department of Human Services, formerly Welfare, that are unsustainable. I mean, we are simply don't have enough revenue. It's like a 30 cents out of every new dollar coming in is going directly into human services costs. So the trajectory is unsustainable. And that's part of the workforce development, is that we need to incentivize people to become independent rather than dependent
yes.
on taxpayer programs.
Yes, most definitely. And, you know, and I have to, you know, there were multiple instances of, you know, wishful thinking that somehow that there is a, you know, a windfall to be had from, you know, from raising the minimum wage, the, you know, a windfall to come from mandatory unitary combined reporting, which is going to turn the screws on businesses by giving the State Department of Revenue the powers of the IRS in an attempt to impose Pennsylvania tax liability on your business operations in other states. We've already dealt dealt with this issue by giving expanded powers to the Secretary of Revenue to disallow business deductions that he or she says are not legitimate. But the third example of like wishful thinking, this yearning for a big pot of leprechaun gold, is the governor's insistence on adding a new additional industry-specific tax on Pennsylvania energy production, when in fact the natural gas folks pay every tax there is and pay an industry-specific impact fee on top of it, and that fee is going to collect this year $250 million.
Well, David, this is where fifth budget that the governor has offered, calling for a severance tax, but actually it was absent from his budget address because he's taking a different tack. He wants to monetize, that means borrow on future revenues, about $4.5 billion that would cost us $8 billion over the 30 year life. And he wants to fund everything, you know, infrastructure, internet expansion, all sorts of things that, well, would be hard pressed to say, hey, that's not a government function. Yeah, a lot of these things are. But with that leprechaun money, as you note, that's how he's kind of put a little different twist this time on wanting to extract more money on top of what were record revenues from the gas industry this last year.
Well, and I have to say, you know, the PMA is part of a coalition called Forge the Future, and that we commissioned a study which said that if we maximize the energy opportunity to grow Pennsylvania's economy, we could expand state GDP by $60 billion. That's not a one-time windfall of $60 billion. That's that the overall economy could be permanently that much larger. You're talking about 100,000 permanent jobs, and if we achieve that level of growth, that would be an additional $2 billion or $3 billion of revenue for the Commonwealth every year to deal with, again, pressing public concerns. But that's how you reach the expanded revenue, through growth. You can't do it by just trying to bleed, taxpayers to take more out of the private economy today.
Taxes and borrowing.
So this is where we are. There's so much going on and there's so much more to say, but this is all the time that we have for this week. Again, thank you so much for being with us. Matt, where can the listeners go to learn more about you and your group and what you're doing?
Go to thecommonwealthpartners.com.
Outstanding. Rebecca, where can people go to find you?
We can be found at nfib.com/PA or on Facebook or Twitter.
Outstanding. And as ever, you find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on Sunday morning at 8:30 on the Pennsylvania Cable Network with PMA Perspective. For Matt and Rebecca, thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. In a confluence of events unique to Penn's Woods, the nation's most famous groundhog emerges from his winter slumber in Punxsutawney to forecast the weather, while along the banks of the Susquehanna, the governor of Pennsylvania appears before the legislature to offer his version of the state budget. Both events are a dubious exercise in prognostication. Following the governor's reelection last November, the guessing game in Harrisburg was which Tom Wolf would emerge from his budget borough. The Tom Wolf, who early in his first term called for massive tax hikes, or the more fiscally restrained Tom Wolf of last year? Recent weeks have given us the answer. It is now clear Tom Wolf will attempt to make Pennsylvania the poster child for democratic socialism. Socialists are ascendant in the Democrat Party nationwide, including Wolf's new lieutenant governor, who is a leading light in that movement. As a result, Wolf feels emboldened to make a run at enacting the far-left agenda he was denied in his first term. As in the film Groundhog Day, the governor's efforts to enact a so-called severance tax on natural gas produced in Pennsylvania has returned to play out again. Wolf has now been around Harrisburg long enough to learn how the game is played, so this time he's added a twist. Kick the tax revenue to projects in select legislative districts to earn the votes of enough lawmakers to pass the tax. There is an old saying under the Capitol Dome that it takes a billion to pass a billion, meaning you essentially need to bribe enough legislators with favored projects to gain the votes needed to pass the tax hike. Wolf is now proposing to borrow $4.5 billion to fund projects outside the scope, meaning not currently funded, of the budget. Most of that currently theoretical money would be spent on infrastructure projects. Infrastructure, meaning primarily roads and bridges, appears to be a black hole for tax dollars. Just a few years ago, then-Governor Tom Corbett pushed through what was, in effect, a 30-cent per gallon increase in state gasoline taxes to fund infrastructure improvements. 5 years later, with revenue from that tax hike still rolling in, Wolf wants even more feed for the PennDOT beast. Raising taxes is not the only component of Wolf's attempt to transform the Keystone State into the People's Republic of Pennsylvania. Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman is going on a so-called listening tour as a prelude to making a push for legalizing recreational marijuana. During last year's campaign, Wolf claimed the state was not ready for legalization of that gateway drug, but the lure of revenue gained from taxing legalized pot appears to have changed his mind. The governor also wants to raise the state's minimum wage. In the left's playbook, this is the first step toward fulfilling their ultimate vision of a guaranteed annual income and a government-run single-payer health care system. This despite the fact studies show minimum wage hikes have the ultimate effect of reducing the number of entry-level jobs, thus hurting workers at the lowest end of the wage scale. Standing in the way of these economically destructive proposals is the Republican-controlled General Assembly. While the governor has an infusion of political capital in the wake of his reelection, he faces a more conservative Republican majority than he did during his first term. GOP moderates, mostly in the Philadelphia suburbs, went down to defeat last November. That put conservatives within the Republican caucuses of the two chambers in a significantly stronger position. The Achilles heel for Republicans remains the state Senate, where leadership has a track record of caving in to the demands of Democrat governors. Across the rotunda in the House, however, lawmakers have been more willing to stand their ground. Legislative Republicans are in for a battle because in the days leading up to his budget address, Governor Tom Wolf has made it clear he plans to live up to his reputation as the most liberal governor in America. As 2020 approaches, Pennsylvania not only will be a battleground state in the presidential election, it will be ground zero in the fight between pro-growth capitalism and democratic socialism. With a town hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 24 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth. They include WCHE-AM in Westchester, WEDO-AM in White Oak, along with WAEB-AM and WKAP-AM in Whitehall, Pennsylvania. And we are looking forward to the annual Pennsylvania Leadership Conference. This year is the 30th anniversary conference, which will be held April 5th and 6th at the Radisson Penn Harris Convention Center in Camp Hill. This year's featured speaker will be Wall Street Journal columnist and commentator Kimberly Strassel. As usual, there will be numerous speakers, including Jimmy Kemp of the Jack Kemp Foundation, Mark Janis, who is plaintiff in the landmark U.S. Supreme Court case Janis v. AFSCME, Kay Coles James of the Heritage Foundation, and Salita Zeno of the New York Post and Washington Examiner. Panel presentations on key state and national issues, workshops, and the opportunity to network with conservatives from across the state, also part of the conference. To learn more and register for the 2019 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, go to paleadershipconference.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle. All of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.